providing Coleman with a unique blend of music. You're listening to Live 95, Coleman's independent radio. WRJMLP, Coleman. Live 95 is Coleman's independent radio. And now, it's time for Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Coleman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Coleman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And no lawyer on this show actually helped write that disclaimer. And now, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
Welcome back to another edition of Understanding the Law. Triple Threat is back in studio. Little D, Big D, and marvelous Melvin Haston, Coleman attorney. And all I can say is roll tide roll.
We said a lot of that last night and today. I guess that's been on TV all day, all night.
That's all I've seen on Facebook. I mean, it's nonstop. It's crazy, but I don't care.
It was kind of a gradual wave that built up very slowly and surely and then sort of came to a climax in overtime.
Right about 11 o'clock.
Yeah. Let me tell you
right about 11 o'clock, there's a lot of fussing and cussing.
There are a lot of eaves and, you know, ups and downs.
I do not mind giving credit where it's due. And let me tell you something. The Georgia Bulldogs brought it like no other team could in that first half. Unbelievable. Their defense, their offense, I mean, they were playing a great game.
Then the halftime.
Then halftime came, and it's time to bring out Tua.
The big boys.
You know, I'll admit that Jalen Hurts is a really good ball player. But for him to sit in that pocket constantly and
– he will not do it.
It was almost sometimes like he's not motivated to even look around his surroundings, because you cannot stand in a pocket that long. Somebody's going to get you, and that's just the way it is. And I think that Saban's just like, hey, it's time for him to go. We got to bring Mr. Hawaiian Punch in here and get something done. And he did.
Yes.
That kid's on fire. And for him to have the stats that he did coming out of high school, I'm surprised that he didn't have tons of colleges after him. The kid will be a superstar if he gets playing time. There's no doubt about it.
He'll have playing time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes. You know, I got a feeling he'll start next year.
Probably
so. I've just got that feeling. But, you know, Jalen was cool about it and was in the huddles and, you know, probably giving a little prep talk. And the kid just did incredible, you know. And Bama finally come back a little bit and started showing some poise. And, you know, I'm not too crazy about the kicker. Never have been. And, geez, for him to miss some of those kicks last night.
Two of them to win the game, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Either one of them would have won the game.
Incredible. So I see.
I like to win it the way we want it, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The long pass. And the way that he had his head tilted to the right just threw the defense completely off, because they really thought that he was fixing to throw it to the right, and then all of a sudden he goes to the left. And what a perfect throw to land in his hands. Perfect.
In stride.
Yes, exactly.
Going in the end zone. That's pretty nice.
Perfect.
You know, that was so perfectly planned, too, because every time they interviewed him after the game, he's like, yeah. Let me tell you exactly what happened. It was like they were interviewing a coach.
What a game. I mean, I honestly didn't know if – you know, I really didn't know if Bama could get past Clemson, honestly. And they just manhandled them. And what I was telling myself last night, no lie, if we can handle Georgia like Auburn handled Georgia during that regular season game, we've got it made in the shade.
Yeah.
Because Auburn manhandled that team. Granted, they come back and beat them in the SEC championship, but still, Georgia came to play ball last night. And Kirby Smart, what an incredible coach to go inside of a program for 2 years and go to the national title. It just doesn't happen. It really doesn't. It don't happen. So for him to do that, kudos to him. He'll probably get an extension contract tomorrow.
Yes.
I mean, that's just the way it goes. So until he has a bad season, and then that'll be it. They'll start grappling. I seen just a while ago Mike Shula gets fired from the Carolina Panthers. So, you know, you're going to see a lot of firing and hiring here within the college and the NFLs, and we'll see what happens. But poor Mike Shula, well, he's just not head coach material, that's for sure.
No.
Never has been.
No, yeah, and he's down in Jacksonville too, wasn't he?
I think he was
offensive coordinator until he'll get passed around. Somewhere.
I think he was like the quarterback coach down at Jacksonville. Yeah. And honestly, I didn't even know that he went to Carolina because I don't keep up with the NFL. But by the way, I did turn on the TV the other day when I think it was Saturday maybe that they had the Titans on TV, and they scanned the stadium. No lie, I guarantee you it was less than 1,000 people in that stadium, and I applauded it.
Yeah,
I loved
exactly.
It. So we have Brenda on the line. Brenda Cuz Parrish, welcome to Understanding the Law. Tell me what's on your mind, girl.
Hey, guys.
How are you?
You know me. I can't say it, but I'll say RT.
RT.
I'll leave it at that.
All you got to do is say Ropad.
I can't do it.
Say it real fast.
What? Just one time. Just one
real
time.
Real fast.
I can't. I can't.
Look, you will be the co-host on Understanding the Law next week. If I can hear it, just roll tide. Just one quick time.
That's not good enough.
Come on,
Brenda. Just say it.
Look, I'll say War Eagle.
Can't do it. Well, I'm glad you can. You're lucky I say RT.
RT, look.
But anyway, you know what,
Brenda?
Awesome
I applaud Auburn for what they've done this year.
Listen, after listening to all these UCF fans, which, by the way, where the hell is UCF anyway? I know Central Florida.
Somewhere.
Orlando, right. Yeah.
And they play in a crap conference. You know, they've made themselves national champs, you know, supposedly.
Self-titled.
They didn't have the schedule Bama, Auburn, any SEC school has. You know, I understand what it feels like because Auburn's been in that position before, third, you know, and no, you know, didn't anything
undefeated.
Come from it.
Yep.
But before the playoff system, which I still think there's things with that needs to be tweaked. But still, I understand their pain, but they're not an Auburn. They're not an Alabama. They're not a Georgia, and they never will be. So it just kills me how they've, really, and they've made me so ill with all their Twitter posts and everything else that I actually found myself pulling for your team last time.
Well, you know, I applaud Central Florida.
And I'm not a Georgia fan either. So.
Yeah, for them to do an undefeated season. I mean, I applaud any team, but you're right.
Oh,
when you're not out there playing a classification college, you know, up here with the big boys, you can't call
exactly.
yourself a self-titled national title winner. I mean, you're not playing nobody, you know, and that's
right.
That's exactly why Miami has been in one of those crappy conferences because they didn't want to join the SEC. Now, I mean, that's just the bottom line, and so whatever. That's just the way I look at it.
Well, and didn't these teams at one time, like Florida State and all these others, did they not have a chance to join?
Oh
the
yeah,
SEC?
Oh yeah, they did. Yes,
and,
they
mean,
did.
I mean, think about it. Why would you give yourself that death? You know, sentence.
Yeah.
You're not gonna do that.
Because they were pretty confident that they could win the title, you know, wherever they're at. I don't even know what it's called. Is it the WAC or something? The ACC or something?
Who are you talking about? It's Florida State and all them. Miami, they're the ACC.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, and they were confident that they could win that title because they knew they couldn't win it in the SEC. Bottom line.
No, they never would.
No, absolutely
we,
not.
We beat ourselves up each week enough. And I'm not just saying this because, you know, I'm a Yankee originally, and I love my northern cousins that'll be coming down next week to see us. But there's nothing, I mean, they're Big Ten, but there's nothing like the SEC. And I'm not just saying that because, you know, I'm an Auburn grad. I'm saying it because we have such a pool of, you know, talent from, and everyone wants to play at these schools. Oh, yeah. I mean, heck, y'all's quarterback's from Hawaii.
Right.
So,
can you imagine telling your parents, hey, look, Mom, Dad, I want to go to Alabama. What?
And they do.
Yeah.
Alabama?
Yeah. Well, yeah. You think about what made, what's-his-face come to Alabama? Joe Namath. Joe Namath.
Yeah, you know what? I really don't know unless he was just really in love with Bear Bryant for some reason. I really don't know. But, yeah, who would have ever known that he would have come down south?
Right. And think I guess I'd want to get away from Pennsylvania, too, though.
Oh, yeah. All that cold weather, that's crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, I just want to congratulate y'all. I thought it was a great game. The only thing I think that is a smear on it, and I saw it on video today, and I thought, oh, my God, if that was a player on our sideline, I hope Saban rings him a new one.
Oh, yeah, the guy who was wanting to fight everybody?
The unsportsmanlike call?
Yeah.
I would have kicked him off the team.
Yeah. And not only did he, and the one poor player who usually gets in trouble is actually trying to get him out of the way from doing it, he goes to the sidelines and acts like a thug on the sidelines. And I thought, when I watched the video, I thought, is he trying to be upset? Because he's mouthing and yelling and tries to go after an assistant coach.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sorry, his butt would have been sent straight to the locker room, and I'm sure Saban will take care of him when it's all said and done. But I thought, okay, this has been a great game, clean game. That was just a bad smear that he did not, you know, that was something he didn't need to do.
And he ends up on the field next kickoff, makes the tackle. Yeah, I figured he's going to the locker room. I figured he was done for that night. But
I know they, you know, I've heard my kids tell me that they talk trash and all that kind of stuff. That's just what players do. And the guy was smiling and laughing when after it happened. And I'm sure he had been talking trash. But, and I think that player, the Brown player, is from Georgia. So he probably knew a lot of those players anyway. But, the Alabama player's from Georgia. But, that was just unnecessary.
It was.
And even pushing his own teammates on the sideline. I hate to see any kind of stuff like that from any of our SEC schools.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't matter what team. It's classless. You don't do mm-hmm. things like that because you have the discipline from your coaches not to do that.
Exactly. And I mean, I would say the same thing if it was an Auburn player that did it.
Oh, yeah, just, exactly.
You know, like I've even told my own son, you know, at basketball games, those players that look at the ref and go, look. You know, like, why are you calling me for a foul? You know, or slam the ball down. You know, he knows I'll be the first to march off at the seats and go down there and pull him, you know, out by his hair. So you just don't act like that.
Show respect.
You know, like Bear Bryant's quote was, act like you've been there before. You know, when you make a touchdown, in other words, you know, act like you've been there before.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
But anyway, but congrats. Glad y'all had a good game.
Thank you. And if you have time next week to come by, you can co-host with us next Tuesday night.
Tuesday would be great.
Sounds good.
If he doesn't have ball game, I'm looking to.
Roll Tide to you is all I got to say.
What?
I said roll Tide to you.
Well, RT.
RT and War Eagle. See you later. So, yeah, I mean, you know, when we look at the Auburn Tigers at the beginning of the season, they started off kind of bad.
Yeah,
you know,
I thought Gus was gone.
Me too. I mean, how many? He's like a cat with nine lives, you know. But Auburn progressed as each game went on, and Buddy, let me tell you something. They played some ball, and for them to go in, and I hate to say it, for God's sake, but they manhandled Alabama
and Georgia, yeah.
and Georgia, and man, what a props to them! But evidently, Auburn likes the coach, and I guess they'll keep him. I don't understand it, but I know there has to be consistency with a coaching team. You can't get mad like Florida does and fire your coach, or Arkansas fire your coach. And it's just, you know, you have to have a solid management team, coaching team to go forward. And like I said, for Kirby Smart to do this, it's just incredible, his second year. But let me tell you something. As you know, football is all about business.
Yeah.
And that's all it's about. And it's bringing the revenue into each college. So if you don't do something good, they're going to fire you.
I had looked up to see what the paydays are. I bet it's going to be unbelievable. SEC's check would be nice. And
Oh, yeah. But, you know, and I guess Saban probably gets an extra million or million and a half probably for winning the national title.
I think it's in 100. I thought it was like a million, too. But it's in hundreds of thousands. It's 200,000 or 300,000. I mean, I'll take it, wouldn't you?
Yes,
I'll take
it. Bonus. I would. And you know his wife, the little sweet Terry, probably did it all.
I think it's 600,000 for. I think that's what he said he would give for postseason.
600,000.
But now, at one time, that money was going to what, Nick's kids or whatever else. So yeah. He donated a bit of that money to Nick's kids. So that's probably what ends up.
Yeah, and he's got plenty of
when
money.
When you're making so. 8 or 9 million a year, you don't need.
Oh, yeah, that's a drop in a bucket.
Getting all your free of
it's like Danielle going locally shopping at Belk's or something, drop about a 10,000, 100,000 or something. I don't know. That's crazy. Well, we just thought this was a law show. It's actually sports tonight.
It is sports radio tonight. I was trying to think of some topics that we hadn't talked about. Last week, I had Jerry Kilgo here with me last week. Josh was sick. Couldn't make it in. He sent his partner, Jerry, and we talked all about workers' comp. We got approval on everything covered about workers' comp. That was kind of a topic we haven't talked that much about. And, you know, I see them probably 2 or 3 a month. People come in and talk to me about workers' comp cases.
All right,
and
so
stuff.
Questions off the top of my head since you're saying it. Employee at work, accident, they lose 2 fingers.
Yes. Okay?
So is the employer's insurance and I don't know. I mean, they would automatically probably get some kind of check for dismemberment of 2 fingers by an on-the-job injury.
Yes. What happens is, we talked about them last week, when you talk about workers' comp injuries, you have scheduled injuries and non-scheduled injuries. And scheduled injuries means that in the law, it's 25557 is the code section, but in it, they have actually a list of stuff that says if you lose an arm, it's this much. If you lose a hand, it's this much. If you lose a finger, it's this much. 2 fingers, 3 fingers,
right.
A thumb. I mean, they even got them broke down to thumbs and stuff. If you lose your eyesight, your hearing. If you lose your eyesight, one eye and one arm, or one arm, one right. leg. I mean, it's crazy. But they have every combination you can think of, and it always deals with your eyes, your ears. It deals with your arms from your shoulder down and your legs from your hips down. So any injury.
Melvin, I broke a nail. How much do I get?
Broke a nail. Well,
where do I file that?
Yeah, I know. You know, the thing is, as we discussed last week too with workers' comp, it's all about how it affects your employability.
Oh.
Yeah. So you're.
I got
nail,
a press button.
Yeah, press button.
I can't press the buttons as effectively.
But so in that case, like with someone, and that happens a lot, you know, if you lose 2 fingers, it even breaks it down to the digits, I think. It may break it down to the knuckle and whatever else. But that, there'll be a percentage for it. You know, they'll say when we do workers' comp cases, the first thing you do is say, all right, for the 52 weeks prior, how much money did you make total? And then you divide that number by 52 weeks, and then that gives your average weekly earnings.
Okay.
Okay, so that's easy. Average weekly wages, average weekly earnings, or average weekly wages. So that's the number you start with. You multiply that number times 66 2/3, and that is your workers' comp rate. So, like, if you made $1,000, because that's an easy number, if you made $1,000 a week was your average, then $666 would be your workers' comp rate. That number's important because that number is based on a lot of things. For instance, a finger, let's say it's worth 20 weeks. You get 20 weeks of the $600-something. That's how much you get. That's it.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it for it.
All right, so I'll kind of be vague. My brother, God rest his soul, so he was working at a local place in Coleman County. He was on a cleanup crew. Guy turns the machine on. It pulls his hand in.
Yes.
It mangles 2 of his fingers, and they're basically useless.
Yes.
So folks at the local hospital amputates both of his fingers down to about his first knuckles.
Yes.
Now, the only thing, I remember it well, it was about 1982, 1983, 84 when it happened. Oh, yeah, about 82. And So the employer offered him a lifetime supervisor's job because of this accident. And he had got some attorneys out of Birmingham that you could only use if you were referred to them. And, well, basically, you know, I think they kind of they let him go at the job. And it took at least 2 or 3 years for him to get any money whatsoever. But he ended up getting $250,000 for the loss of two fingers. And then, of course, the attorneys, they took 50%. So he ended up with $125,000 with the loss of two ligaments. And that was it. And he's out left finding another job.
Well, he must have, for him to get that kind of money, you said the employer fired him?
I'm pretty sure they let him go.
Yeah, so he must have got some more money out of them for that, because the digits is not going to get you that much money. That's the thing about it. You lose an arm or something,
yeah,
it's just not a lot of money.
I remember it well.
He's talking about, yeah, you know, a lot of times you're not talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars. You're talking about thousands of dollars,
right.
Tens of thousands maybe. But so for him to get that kind of money, they probably filed the a wrongful termination lawsuit against the employer too, saying, look, you fired me because I had a workers' comp injury. There's no other reason you fired me for.
Right.
And they probably settled that case with them, or...
Yeah, like I said, I didn't think it would take 3 years, but it did. Yeah. It was 3 or 4 years, but he finally got his money. And very sad, though, to lose, you know. Because for the mental anguish of himself for the first 2 or 3 years to constantly put his hand in his pocket, because, you know.
Oh, I know. It's just different. Yeah.
And then, you know, as he got older, he didn't care then.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just a horrible accident. And, you know, I'm in management where I'm at, and I talk about safety 4 times a day.
Yep.
I cover different topics.
Now that you say that, so I guess he cut his fingers, didn't he? That's why he's got out. I mean, he cut his fingers off.
Well, no.
I know you said he pulled in.
Yeah, okay. The machine pulled his hand in, which then mangled his fingers, and they're like, well, the hospital said they're useless.
Yes.
I mean, they're just going to be hanging, so we may as well amputate half of them off.
Because I'm sitting there thinking, how did he get that kind of money? Now, let me tell you what happened in his case. If you're injured on a job, then your exclusive remedy is workers' comp. That's it. So the majority of cases, it would be that formula. Now then, he got away from workers' comp. The way he got away from workers' comp is... You can get more money for stuff like that if you prove like a safety device issue or whatever else. So what he did is he probably, because if he would have been in workers' comp, he'd only got $30,000 or $40,000.
Right.
It wouldn't have been much at all. He would just got that much money for his loss of his fingers and that's it. And he would have had medical expenses for that finger loss for the rest of his life, which I don't know what they would be, you know, but that would be it. So what they did to get that kind of money is they sued him under the Employer's Liability Act, and they argued that there was a safety issue. Probably that machine had a safety device that was removed. The employer knew about it,
right?
Didn't replace it, so that took him out of the workers' comp and allowed him to get just like regular pain. Because you get the pain and suffering and all the other stuff with it. Whereas with workers' comp, you just get compensated just for your loss, and that's it.
Now, you know, in today's world, I don't know if we had it back in 1982, because we have it, you know, at work, we talk about it all the time, is lockout, tagout, where you actually unplug the machine, and you have a plastic device that you put over it with a lock, and you just lay it down so it cannot be turned on while it's being worked on.
Yes.
Preventive maintenance. So evidently they didn't have lockout tagout back then.
So.
And I'm not sure if my brother actually unplugged the machine or not, but a guy walked by and turned the machine on while he was working on it.
Yeah. That was it.
I tell you
a story. And I still see this guy around Coleman a lot, and I wouldn't even tell his name anyway if I remembered it. But when I was a paramedic, I'll tell you about a call I went on, but this is how fast you can get injured anywhere. He was working at Walmart Distribution. Spilled, it was a vegetable oil, one of them big old, like one or two gallon things of vegetable oil had spilt on the conveyor belt. of course, well, that conveyor belt was slipping. So he thought, I'm going to wipe that roller off so his thing will run. So he had a towel down there wiping that roller off. Well, what happened? The towel, his hand got caught, pulled it in the belt, removed his arm from his body.
Oh, my
So just something, while the belt was running, make a decision that's the rest of your life decision real fast. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I have seen so many different things, being in management for, and being in distribution for 32 years. I have seen everything.
Yes.
Literally, I have seen everything. I have seen people's hands completely ripped up, and their muscles hanging out.
Yep.
unfortunately, one day, as soon as I got to work, there was a gentleman that was dead, laying in the yard. He was actually going to try and he was pulling two pup trailers, which are 26-foot trailers, and he was going to actually had his the brake line in his hand to connect to the trailer, and we had just a very slight upgrade. I mean, it's not very much at all in our yard, and he didn't put his brakes on. So it slid down just a little bit to catch him in between the trailers and crush him.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I looked at him and done everything that I needed for the company, to secure the scene. And the paramedics come out, and kind of raised the shirts. He had no bruising. He had nothing. I mean, it just completely crushed him instantly.
Yeah.
And it's horrible to go to work and see that. Yeah. Of course, it probably hit me 30 minutes or an hour later, and it was just horrible. And married, 4 or 5 kids. They lived around Decatur. And I'm just thinking, wow, in about an hour, they're going to have a state trooper to pull up to their house.
And tell them what happened. Yeah.
Yep. Horrible. So, we preach safety every single day because I see so much every day, so much every week, and it's just crazy. And it takes 1 second.
Yep, just get a little careless, and at 1 second,
it's crazy.
And in them, if you die from an injury that's work related, then that it's 500 weeks. You get 500 weeks. You 66 2/3 pay. So that would be that 66,000 times 500, which is quite a bit of money in that situation. But does it bring your person back? But that's what they depend. That's what it goes to, his dependents, or it'd be his wife or his kids. That's how that money is dispersed. So the but like I said, most workers' comp stuff, we don't make that much money off of them. I do them because I just like doing them.
Right.
And then, and usually that brings in more business later on, some other kind of cases and stuff. So,
can you imagine how busy OSHA is per week?
Yeah, there's a lot of.
But you know what? I applaud them because they make people act straight.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and you get big fines if you don't
do
what you're supposed to.
Yeah.
So.
We've had a visitor too one time and just. I can remember an instance where a forklift driver did not have his seatbelt on the sit-down forklift. $10,000.
Oh, yeah. They like throwing him $10,000 fines out. 10 and 20s.
So, yeah. If they ever come to visit your place, you're in trouble.
Yep.
Need to straighten up. You're listening to Understanding the Law with Coleman attorney Melvin Hasten. We'll be back in just a moment.
Attention Coleman business owners. You are the people we want to hear from. All of us here at Live 95 want to take a moment to remind you of what life was like before Live 95. So we don't want to go back to that. This is just a friendly reminder that Live 95 can help you. If you're a new business just getting started, or a well-established large business, Live 95 can actually help you get tax breaks on your tax bill.
Woo-hoo!
Hey, we're not kidding. Seriously. Send us an email at studio@live95coleman.com today, or visit our website, live95coleman.com, and click on support to find out more right now. Do it. Thanks for listening to Live 95. We're Coleman's Independent Radio.
We've spent a lot of time on this. The investigation is finally over. We uncovered several leads, and we have finally found it. We have found what every small business in Coleman has been looking for. Fiber optic quality internet is here. Utilizing cutting-edge radio technology, Cyber Broadband is now able to offer fiber optic quality internet in the immediate downtown Coleman area and most Coleman industrial parks. More information is available by calling Cyber Broadband, 256-734-1077, 256-734-1077, or on the web at cyberbroadband.net.
Are you having trouble seeing your computer screen? Are the traffic signs looking a little fuzzy? Are the things that you used to be able to see looking just a little out of focus? Dr. Wayne Fuller has been helping Coleman see better for years, and he's still located on 2nd Avenue between the Catholic Church and Highway 278. You can call his friendly staff at 256-734-1121, and they'll be happy to get you seeing better, whether it's with contacts, glasses designed just for you, or a low-cost alternative to LASIK. Again, Dr. Wayne Fuller is available at 256-734-1121.
Hey guys, let's face it, we all want to look our best, but with minimal effort, right? Well, that's where Angela at Scissor Salon comes in. She'll get you looking your best so you're always on top of your game. Walk-ins are always welcome. Scissor Salon, Highway 278 East, just past the water plant, 735-3089, 735-3089. Look for the big scissors on the roof.
Welcome back. Live 95 is Coleman's Independent Radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Coleman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Coleman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
Welcome back to Understanding the Law.
Yeah, I don't think Live 95 management staff would get as gruesome as you did. Just saying that.
And disclaimer, by the way. The views and opinions...
Maybe the second part of the show will be better.
...of Marvelous Melvin and Big D is not the same as the management staff of Live 95.5. As a matter of fact, Jay doesn't agree with anything that we say. So there you go. There's our disclaimer for the night. And little D was waving at me to say something or do something, and I didn't understand her.
Say hi to your dad.
Oh, hey, Dad. How are you? I hope you're feeling better. Look, we need to get my dad on.
Yes, we need to get
whew, good Lord.
Where's he live at?
He lives over in Addison.
Oh, okay.
And, he is a political little guru. I don't know if we can handle him in this room or not. He's a fun man. Let me tell you something. And he loves politics.
Well, they're fishing start hitting hot now because the qualification deadline is sometime in February. I don't know if it's the first or the end. I can't remember. But then the primary election's in June. So if things fishing start yeah. pouring out, there's a lot of people up for election.
Yes, there is.
Your dad wants to know what the subject is.
What's the subject? Dad, we've been talking about workman's comp and was actually talking about Dale's case that he had back in the 80s with his fingers. So let me ask you this, Melvin. What if we have a workman's comp case to where it was actually the employee's fault that they've done something wrong
yes.
on the job?
The compromise in workers' comp, when they passed the workers' comp laws, I don't know when, maybe in the 60s, maybe even before that. It's been a long time ago. When Alabama got the workers' comp laws, it was business versus workers. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And everybody's trying to figure out how we're going to make this equal for everybody and all that stuff. So the compromise was this. The business says if you limit how much money is paid out, by doing the scheduled injuries, by setting the maximum of a bodily injury at 300 weeks. That's the maximum amount you can draw for 300 weeks. If like I said, if it's a death, it's 500 weeks. Otherwise, the maximum is 300. If you set the limits on there, then the compromise was you don't have to. I mean, the business gave up contributory negligence, which is what that is. And plus, the workers don't have to prove that the employers are negligent. So, for instance, let's go back to the Walmart situation that I was discussing a minute ago. There's probably, without the workers' comp law, that guy would have never got any money, probably, because it was not Walmart's fault. It'd be hard to prove what did Walmart do to cause him to do that.
Exactly.
You know, he made a decision that was a mistake. And probably 90% of the stuff is not the employer's fault. You know, I've handled cases, for instance, a guy's driving a truck for a company, he's tarping a load, wind gets under it, or just something happens while he's tarping, pulls his back muscle, maybe he falls or does something. Nothing the employer did to cause that.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So you don't have to prove negligence. You don't have to prove that the employer could have done something or whatever else for that. That is completely out on workers' comp. And then on the other side, contributory negligence as far as the employer is out too, so they can't come back and say it's your fault you did this.
Right.
You don't get any money. The exceptions are, of course, if you're drunk, taking drugs, doing something like that. That is an exception that gets you out. That's a defense for workers' comp. Horseplay is a defense. You know, if you get injured horseplaying while you're at work, that's a defense for them. Now go back with the drinking and stuff like that. If you have a work-related injury, they always send you for a drug test. That's number one.
Right.
I mean, that's a requirement by OSHA and the Department of Industrial Relations and everything else. That's just a requirement. But the employers like it because, boy, if you happen to test positive,
there you go.
You're in a mess. Now then, it don't mean they don't have to pay you. They still have to prove that your intoxication or your drugs or whatever else contributed to the accident. You know, and sometimes I've had a case where a guy tested positive. I think it was for pot or something. I can't remember. He was driving a truck and everything else, and he was entitled to X amount of money, and employers didn't want to give him nothing, and we met in the middle because it was, I mean, we tried the case, but in, you know, the judge was like, look, you know, he had an accident. He tested positive for marijuana.
Right.
You know, it could have contributed to the accident.
Yep,
I don't
exactly.
know for whatever. Y'all need to go settle this case, so we just have the money, and he got it out there. But anyway, even if the judge, if we finished that case out and tried it, finished out to trial, and he would have ruled against the worker saying, I find that the drugs caused the accident, he would have not got any money personally. But they would have still, under the workers' comp law, as crazy as it sounds, they'd still be required to pay for his medical bills.
Wow.
Yeah.
So let me go on.
So workers' comp is really good for the workers.
Right.
I mean, it really is. Even though you're limited and you don't get as much money, it's really good for you because there are so many workers' comp cases that I've handled. If I had to prove the employer negligent, I don't know. It'd probably be a handful I would have ever tried because there's just no way you can prove the employer negligent.
Right. I'm going to go with a different angle. An employee gets hurt, and we're going to say a back issue, okay? So
yes.
They've hurt their back, and so the doctor has recommended probably for them to actually be off work for 6 months in order to get better. And then the company finds out, hey, look, we've heard that this guy's actually working a second job.
Yes.
They get video of it. They actually catch him in the act. What happens then, maybe company versus workman's comp, because they're paying this guy probably.
Yeah.
And he's drawing this check illegally.
Yeah.
So now what happens to him from workman's comp?
Well, he's probably not going to have to pay the money back, number one. He's probably not going to get any more money, number two, because remember, workers' comp determines what determines is how does it affect your employability? You know what I'm saying? So the employer is coming back saying, obviously he's not affected his work because here he is working.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? And you know, some people, you can be working a job making $9 an hour, get injured, then somehow get lucky and get a $12 an hour job. And then that really messes up your workers' comp because right. you're making more money now.
Right.
It really, you know, it affects you. And what you're entitled to do to then is just a permanent, whatever physical impairment it is. And man, we're just talking about hundreds of dollars or just a couple, 3,000. It's just a very, that's why you don't make much money being an attorney
right.
on these kind of cases. You have to get unfortunately, more serious injuries or whatever else. But, another thing, if I had that situation, a case that you brought in, you know, if he, you'd probably look at, hey, was he working at two jobs, you know, and which job really caused the injury,
right?
You know, was it just an aggravation of the injury? Is his symptoms presently, is it due to that first, the injury that he got from the employer, or is it due to this second job? There's a lot.
Right.
That throws a lot in, and that's where the insurance companies and the lawyers get together, and everybody just comes up and says, hey, here's it. This is, right. you know, I tell people all the time, you know, we want to get to the point of get as much money as they're willing to pay you. Try to get a little bit more than that, and that's it. You don't want to push them to the point they just throw their hands up and say, you want to trial,
right.
go to trial.
Right.
Because you can lose them. You know,
right.
you can definitely lose. I'm trying to think if I've been in that situation. I know I've been in a situation where we didn't get nothing. We appealed it and got a little bit of money then. But I don't know if I've ever gotten a situation in a trial where when we tried it, we've got less money than what was offered. But that's a real possibility.
Now, if you appeal the case, are you automatically going to get a different judge?
No, okay. So workers' comp cases are always handled in circuit court. Circuit court is the highest court in the state,
okay.
other than the appeals court and state Supreme Court. So what happens in workers' comp cases is a majority of them, the old way is that if you got a workers' comp settlement, like if I sued my employer and I didn't sue him. I got a lawyer. We worked this deal out. Didn't have to file a lawsuit, go through the process. Usually that employer is going to go pay the filing fee, $200 or $300 filing fee. We're going to go in front of a circuit judge and get it approved. And then that way it's a final approval and everything else. The Department of Industrial Relations has ombudsmans. Now, they've had them, and most of the time they're mediators. They try to, they're kind of in the middle, not for the employee, not for the work, not for the business. They're in the middle trying to negotiate this thing, make sure things done right and everything else. And they're excellent. I love them. They really help us settle cases, but they can also get it approved and do stuff without actually going through circuit court also. But I think everybody still feels comfortable having a judge because you got a final judgment,
right?
That's there that you can go back on. And get it approved. So if you try your case and a circuit judge rules against you, he rules against the worker, or maybe for instance, the doctor says, hey, this guy's got a 10% physical impairment to his body. And the judge says, no, I'm just only going to give you a 2% instead of 10%. So you feel like, hey, this ain't right. You know, the judge didn't treat me right. What happens is you appeal that case to the Court of Civil Appeals, hoping that they're going to overturn the judge. And I emphasize hoping because
it don't happen very often.
It don't happen very often. I mean, they're not, and in an appeal process, because I was actually going to talk a little bit about appeals tonight, because people always want to get their case appealed. And a lot of people think, well, I'm going to get me a different judge, get a second bite at the apple, whatever else. That is not what happens at appeals. When you appeal a case to like the Court of Civil Appeals, that is a 5-member court down there in Montgomery that will never see you. They'll never talk to you. They'll never hear from you. They'll never talk to your lawyer. Those five judges are going to get they're going to get the court record, which is everything that's been filed. They're going to get a copy of the transcript, which is what happened during the hearing, the court reporter taken down. And then you're going to file it like if I was file an appeal for my client, I would file a brief. The business would file, their lawyers would file a brief, and then I would get the final say-so as a reply brief. So all they're going to do is read documents. I can you imagine that job?
No, I can't.
But
that's
now
crazy.
They get paid $150, $160 a year, so it's probably not that bad.
Probably not.
Yeah, but really, they I think it ain't like they're going to read every single word of the transcript. They're not going to look at every single thing that's filed, whatever else. They rely on the attorneys. You have to point out the important facts. That's why doing the brief is real important. You have to point out the important facts. They'll review it. And then most time, by the time they do so many of these things, they know what the issues are.
Exactly.
And you got to persuade them, because that judge in that workers' comp case, you don't have a jury. He's the judge, the jury, and everything. So he or she. So when they issue that opinion, that's way they determine it's like a jury. And the courts, hey, they give them a preference. They give them a presumption saying they got it correct. They got it right. You have to find a way to say they didn't get it right, and
right.
This is why. Because Supreme Court of Alabama issued this opinion in 1980, and the Civil Appeals Court issued this opinion in 97. It says you can't do this, you can't do that. And what you're trying to do is say the judge didn't do the math right, he didn't do the factoring right, he didn't take this into consideration or whatever else, hoping that what they're going to do, one or two things, they're going to send the case back to the judge and say, okay, you calculated that at this, tell us how you calculated it. And maybe why you didn't do it this way, or they just say you did it wrong, do a whole new trial, Judge.
Wow.
And that ain't going to happen. The only way they're going to make you do a new trial is if the judge ruled, no, I'm not listening to your experts. I'm not listening to that. He or she let in some stuff that they shouldn't have let in that was major impact in your case. Then they will say, no, you get a new trial. But otherwise, you know, if you're lucky, they'll say redo the calculations or show us.
So it don't happen.
So
much.
It don't happen much, and all you do is just spend all your money. You just waste your money out of it. Yeah, but wait, okay. So I talked about a case that I tried, and the judge found that my person wasn't injured at work. I mean, that was the facts that judge made the decision on. So when we appealed the case, my goal in filing the appeal was, I knew the appeals court was going to come back and say, look, that's the facts. You know, unless you got some lawful reason, you ain't going to win this case. So I felt, well, our chances are not good, but we zero anyway.
Right.
So what the Court of Civil Appeals did is they sent out documents. They said, would you like to have a mediation? I was like, heck yeah, I'd like to have a mediator. Well, the other side said, no, we like the judge's ruling. So we went to mediation and had luckily picked a real good mediator. And that person convinced the business, look, you're going to spend this kind of money. What if the judge does this? What if the judge does that? Blah, blah, everything else. And we got a few thousand, not a whole lot.
Right.
We got a few thousand dollars out of it, enough to make the person halfway satisfied. I got a little bit of my money back I spent on the case, and I lost money on that case, but I made a little bit to cover some of my expenses, and that's how we resolved it.
Is the mediator and actually an attorney themselves?
Yes. Yeah. The court of the appeals courts, they have you can go through their. I guess they probably got some courses, some kind of whatever they have for mediation, whatever else. And I guess they can choose who's mediators or not. I don't think any attorney can, but I don't know that they're turning anybody down. Now, if I was just fresh out of law school, they'd probably turn me down. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
but
right.
If you've got some experience, a lot of them are retired judges. You know, the media, we got this, get this big old list and if you, long as you know, you do your legal education, your continuing legal education, show some type of, not really expertise, but some type of a competence in this type of, law or whatever else, they'll appoint them. You know, they have a list of mediators, and well, they charge you too, $175 or that's the cheapest, but most of them are probably $250, $300 an hour.
Now, is it very common that mediators are even used these days?
Yes.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, boy, they really help you out, because that mediator is not for either side. They can,
right.
They'll listen to both sides, and that's where the experience comes in, and that's why I love having judges as mediators, because they will, you know, sometimes I'll go back to that case. My client, in that, other, that one case, we should have settled a case a long time ago, and they wouldn't do it. Well, we then after the judge ruled against us, well, can we get that settled? Right. No. Sorry, it's over with. But anyway, so sometimes these mediators, they work real good because they say, look, I was a judge for 10 years, 15, 20 years, whatever else. I heard these cases. I've ruled in these cases. I've had experience with the appeals court. You understand that they're probably going to rule that the judge ruled right, and you're going to get zero out of this. So they help reinforce what I tell my clients, and then they go through the other side and says, now, you know, it's kind of like a – I guess they're really two-faced because they go to the other side and say, you realize that the appeals court could probably make this case go try it again, and that judge may see it totally different and really stick it to you this time.
Right.
So it may be your best interest to settle this case. So,
how about that?
Yeah, they use their experience on both ways, and I mean that a lot of cases settle. In Coleman, I mean we don't use them as much for civil cases. We do some of them. We don't use them as much civil cases, but they use a lot in domestic relations cases.
So have you ever done the mediator?
I've not done it. I've considered doing it, but I've not ever done it. No, I've not ever done the mediation.
Is there anything that you have to do?
Yeah, we'd have to go get certified. Probably go take a 20 or 30 hour course. I don't even know if it's that many hours. Just go do some course, then that's it. But you got to have a name, got to have a recognition, you got to have people that's going to come use you, or you just wasting your money.
Gotcha.
You know, because what happens, like the appeals court, the mediators, they literally give us a list, you know, like if they say, all right, you're in Coleman, I'll give you a list of people in Decatur, Huntsville, Birmingham, you know, maybe even Gaston, places like that. So they'll compile me a whole list of mediators, and there'll be 100 people on there. So I'm flipping through trying to figure out who I know, and then the other side's flipping out who do they know and who do you like, and you try to get it, you know. Try to get it down to it. Some people, like for instance, there'd be some mediators that only do workers' comp cases. There'd be some of them that only does contract cases. Huh. Some of them it does, you know, personal injury, and some of them does all of them. So you try to figure out which one you like. And usually, what I do is call the other side up because them defense attorneys they deal with it a lot more than we do, and they'll say, hey, this is a good person. You know, and you're always like, yeah, is this a good person for you or not? But most of the time, they're pretty honest. They'll say, they help us out too. They help us talk to our clients, the insurance companies, and settle the cases.
So when he or she comes in, how long do they actually deal with the case? I mean, is it a mediator? Yeah, is it going to be a day or two that they're going to look at the facts?
Yeah, they're making $300. I mean, I ain't kidding, man. They make like $250, $300 an hour. So that's pretty good. They're knocking down some change pretty good. And there's actually law groups that I have. 20 of them. I mean, 20 or 30 of them in there. I mean, a huge firm. That's all they do is mediation.
Really?
Yeah, they mediate divorce cases and lawsuits, like pending lawsuits in state courts, and then they'll do these appeals and stuff like that. They probably do arbitration and things like that. So what they will do is they'll send you a letter, charge you, you know, however much they charge you, you know, 30 minutes or whatever else for doing your letter. And then they want you to send all of your documents. So then, of course, you get billed at time for them reviewing the documents and then review the time for getting preparation. And then most mediations, probably 4, 5, 6 hours. So we'll go down in the morning, 9 o'clock, you know, trying with a go, get done. You know, they'll feed you a little box lunch, and then 1 or 2 o'clock trying to get it settled. And everybody, you're getting up there, hey, I'm asking for me, and the other side's wanting to give us zero, and then we'll just keep on going down until we get to some point in mediation. And the real good mediators, they'll say, all right, they'll make us both agree, I'll go down to this amount, but you got to agree to go up to this amount.
Right.
And it's kind of crazy. So we'll set some limits and then try to really, really work it. But mediators, they want to settle the case. They want to be successful so they can say, hey, I got 100% success rate or 98% success rate in settling these cases. So,
you know, and I don't even really don't even know if this even can be even grasped by some other company. But you know, if you had any kind of inkling that an employee, a future employee maybe, that actually had a bad workman's comp case in the past, and now they want to get a job with you. You know,
I'm wondering if the bigger companies, like when they're doing background checks, I'm sure that's something they probably look at.
You would think
there is, you know, on application, I ain't filled out applications so long I can't remember, but I believe that a lot of times applications they'll ask you if you had prior injuries, it's been whatever else. But I don't know if they can ask you, if, do you know?
I bet they can't.
One, I don't know that they can ask you if you've had a work related injury.
I'm thinking.
I don't know if they can ask you.
I'm thinking
that
with the whole HIPAA laws, you know.
Yeah,
that's pretty shut. So, and you know, who knows? This company may hire this guy over here. He's done workman's comp for. Well, let's say he's a pro at it.
He may be. There may be some of
it. And
as
soon as he gets hired within a few weeks, he's a pro again. Because now he's wearing out your company.
But it's going to catch up with him because what's going to happen is when he files a new workers' comp claim, that's going to trigger somebody. It should trigger somebody to look into this guy.
I would think they have some kind of database.
Yeah, you're right. Because you could probably. You could probably go back to the Department of Industrial Relations and probably, I mean, I don't know how much they can, I don't know how much information they can give you, but Alicor, you know, if he's had a, remember workers' comp cases, most of them are approved by circuit courts. So all that means is you get your lawyer to look on Alicor, type his name in and see, you know, then you see, hey, there's two or three workers' comp cases there. Then you know what you got. And in that situation, they'll probably remind them that they, you know, tell them, hey, we know what you're doing and stuff.
Right.
But you know, The prior injuries, you know, they take you as you are. Now, you still have the burden of proof that you had an injury, that the plaintiff, the worker in this case, still has to prove that, hey, I have a work-related injury. I have an injury that occurred on the job while I was there, and I made a report. You know, and then you, I mean, some of them's just obvious. The arms, the hands, the legs, whatever else, it's obvious. They, you know, they walked in there and then they're carried out or whatever else, you know. So it's, some of them's obvious. It, you know, it's the back stuff that's when everybody's really
impossible.
Thinking about it. Yeah. But, you know, if that guy's been working there for a while and he ain't missed any work, then he may have had a bad back, but you may have aggravated, but how are you going to prove that you're aggravated? You know, it's just hard. It's hard to prove. They like throwing, that's another one of them compromises. Hey, you had an injury 10 years, you had an auto accident 10 years ago. That's what really caused your back injury. You know, well, I tell the workers, it don't matter. You know, the business, that doesn't matter. He ain't had any problems with it. You know, and you're thinking, you really ain't had any problems with that, did you, buddy? You know, you ain't been going to chiropractor or whatever else. But sometimes you get these cases where you're not saying, hey, this person was injured on the job. They was injured on the job and it may not cause this specific injury, but it aggravated a prior injury.
Right.
And then, you know, it kind of gets to be a little bit, be a little bit different about stuff.
Yep.
Hey, and the other thing I was going to a minute ago about the two employers, you know, there is a part of the comp that workers' comp it says that, you know, maybe employer number one, employer number two, you have to take what percentages, maybe one's 30% liable, one's 70% liable, and you actually make both of them liable for the injury and stuff. Yeah, it gets real complicated. Luckily, I had to do one of them.
Good stuff on understanding the law, man. You can learn a lot of good stuff here.
Yeah.
Coming up Thursday at 6:30 p.m. is going to be the Big D Radio Show. Danielle's going to tell us real quick who our musical guests are.
We have Bailey Vest
is going to be in the house, and possibly Christopher Greer is going to be here. And I'm also going to speak with somebody. It's going to be a surprise. This gentleman is from California, and he had a band back in the 60s, and he has brought his band back. Very popular. This gentleman hung out with the Rolling Stones and all of the big key musicians back in the 60s and 70s, and I'm going to try to make some arrangements and actually have a phone interview with him this Thursday evening. So,
he's probably got some stories.
You know he does. You know he does. So I'm going to try to contact him tomorrow or Thursday morning and have him to call in on the Big D Radio Show. So that should be fun to hear everything that he's got to say and what he's been through. Melvin, thanks again for giving us some law advice, some Crimson Tide advice. This is Triple Threat. This is Big D. For Little D, Coleman attorney Melvin Haston. We will see you next Tuesday on Understanding the Law. God bless you, and most importantly, God bless America. We'll see you next time.